Welcome to Journal Club. I'm Malcolm Diggs. You've probably heard of both deforestation and reforestation, but what on earth is afforestation? Afforestation is the process of planting and growing trees where none originally grew, or they haven't grown in a long time. Afforestation is not replanting a recently cut forest. It's creating a forest where there was previously grassland, desert, or even ice, for example. Though it sounds a bit odd, afforestation is a key practice in sustainable timber production. Rather than chopping down existing forests, a company will grow a brand new forest, chop it down, and repeat. But this technique does have its drawbacks. Commercial afforestation is extremely water-hungry, and as a result, many countries regulate it tightly. In South Africa, where today's research takes place, you can't grow a new forest without first being issued a water license. The licenses are granted based on the government's statistical models that show how that proposed crop would affect the overall energy balance, environment, and water table. In order to create those models, the government needs to know a key metric for the species of tree you want to grow. Evapotranspiration, ET. We'll get into the details of ET shortly. For now, the important thing to know is that this particular research paper is about training a machine learning model that can look at images from Google Earth and estimate ET for specific crops. So to recap, the point of the machine learning model is to produce better ET estimates for each crop. Better ET estimates means better data going to the government's ecological impact models. Better government models means the government can engage in better water resource management, including timber licensing. More effective water resource management means better environmental outcomes for everyone in the long run. All right, with that context, we're ready to get a little bit more technical. There are four terms you need to know for this research to make any sense. ET, LAI, ET0, and KC. ET, evapotranspiration. There are two main ways that water moves from the surface of the earth to the atmosphere. The first is evaporation, in which water vaporizes from the surface. The other is transpiration, in which water is released from plants through their stomata, which are like their pores. Together, these two processes are referred to as evapotranspiration. The level of evapotranspiration occurring within a given area is crop-specific since every plant grows differently, their leaves blocking surface evaporation and engaging in transpiration at rates that are unique to that species. Next is LAI, Leaf Area Index. If you're looking at a given area of land, the LAI is the total area covered by leaves divided by the total ground area. The important thing to note is that since the leaf canopy can be several layers, the LAI may be any number greater than zero, including numbers greater than one. In other words, 5 square meters of land could have 10 square meters of leaf area, giving it an LAI of 2. But this depends on how the researchers are counting the leaf area. Next is ET0, reference evapotranspiration. This is the amount of ET used by a standard reference surface, such as a grass field. ET0 is used as a baseline for other calculations and is always specific to the region being studied. Last is KC, crop coefficient. The crop coefficient is a multiplier you can use to go from ET0 to actual ET, that is, to go from reference evapotranspiration to actual evapotranspiration for a specific species. Actual ET is just ET0 multiplied by KC. Earlier, I said this research was about using Google Earth images to estimate evapotranspiration. That's true, but now that we're familiar with these terms, we can get more specific. This research is more specifically about training a model that can infer the KC from LAI, which is itself derived from Google Earth photos. So let's do that one more time because I know I'm throwing a ton of jargon at you. In this research, Google Earth photos are used to generate a leaf area index. The ML model uses that leaf area index to estimate the crop coefficient. The crop coefficient can be multiplied by the reference ET to derive an estimate for the actual ET for that specific crop. The actual ET can then be used to model the ecological impact of that crop, and this allows the government to be better stewards of the environment. Still with me so far? Great. Now let's look at what these researchers actually did. This research all took place in South Africa in the Two Streams Research Catchment in KwaZulu-Natal Province, KZN, sorry if I butchered that name, which is in the eastern part of the country. They decided to build a proof of concept model for the Acacia Mernzi plant, also known as the Black Wattle. To train a model that can infer KC from LAI, they first needed a lot of LAI and KC to use as training data. They started by getting weather data, including humidity, rainfall, wind speed, etc., from a local weather station. Then they added in additional data from ground sensors to come up with both ET and ET0. This allowed them to derive KC. Rather than generate their own LAI, they downloaded the MODIS MODIS LAI dataset via Google Earth Engine, the computational platform built on top of images from Google Earth. They just needed to narrow the dataset down to areas and dates that overlapped with their ET and ET0 calculations. With that, they were ready to start training their model. They pulled all the KC and LAI into RStudio, tagging each measurement geographically and by date. The process of training the model was basically having an algorithm walk forward through the time series data using a regression analysis to determine the relationship and strength between the KC and the LAI over time. They ran this training process a number of times, trying out different ML algorithms. Specifically, they tried generalized linear model, a decision tree, k-nearest neighbors, random forest, support vector machine, and an ensemble, a stacked model that combined the above. Now, normally an ML engineer would separate the training data into a training set and a validation set, but the sample just wasn't big enough. So instead, they used the K-folds cross-validation technique. This procedure can be used to train and validate your model when your sample size is too small to use conventional validation techniques. You basically split your data into a bunch of smaller sets, K, then train on K-1 of the sets, and validate on the leftover set, then swap the leftover set, and then repeat the whole process. To make that a little clearer, imagine there being 10 people in a building. 9 are in a room, and 1 is in the hallway. You train on the people in the room, and validate on the person in the hallway. Then the person in the hallway comes into the room, and someone else leaves and goes into the hallway. And then you repeat the training again until everyone has had a turn in the hallway. Hope that made more sense. To measure the performance of the various algorithms, they use the following metrics. Coefficient of determination, that's R squared, root mean square error, percentage bias error, mean absolute error, and a Kruskal-Wallis test to test for the statistical significance in the differences in outputs between the algorithms. In the end, the ensemble, the stacked model, was the top performer, with a mean absolute error of 0.03, the next best being twice that. A root mean square error of 0.05, the next best being 0.08, and R squared being 0.68, the next highest being 0.23. So the model was fairly accurate, though it wasn't perfect. The KC values it generated underestimated ET some months and overestimated in others. The authors rate the model as satisfactory to good, and in the paper they point out a number of ways that they could improve it. So, what's the takeaway from this? Narrowly, and the authors point to this in their discussion, I think this study may form the basis of an eventual generalized model for KC or ET estimation. The issues with seasonal variation may disappear as sample sizes grow. Eventually, a model trained on thousands of species of plants in many different environments could be extremely powerful and useful. The more people who used and provided data and feedback to such a model, the better it would be at creating KC estimates. But more generally, I think this model provides a great framework for exploratory model training on low-volume data. The experimentation they did with multiple algorithms, the use of the stacked algorithm, the K-folds cross-validation, and the Kruskal-Wallis test are all great tools to have in your tool belt when you're working with small sample sizes. If you'd like to dive into how they performed their analysis, I'd encourage you to download the paper, as there are many more details there. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Journal Club. Hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Diggs signing off. See you tomorrow.